Alaskans, we're still dealing with a pandemic. Longer nights and seasonal affective disorder don't make it any easier. We encourage you to take care of both your mental and physical health this winter. Get outside. Enjoy traditional foods. Connect with your community. And keep your body moving. Let's take care of ourselves and each other.
Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Alyssa Yakudi London. Cultural bonds play a big role in Native people's responsibility to care for their loved ones, but it can also take a toll on the caregivers, and the pandemic increases the burden. The good news is tribes and organizations have a number of services, including meal delivery, transportation, and home nursing that helps ease the strain. We'll hear about those right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Megan Kamrick in for Antonia Gonzalez. A big conference about the shrinking Colorado River began this week in Las Vegas. The river is the primary source of drinking water and irrigation for millions of people in the region. Discussions among scientists, state and tribal officials focused on the West's historic drought. The Mountain West News Bureau's Nate Hedgie files this report from day one of the conference.
State officials from Utah to New Mexico to Wyoming all agreed. The Colorado River is in dire straits. Opening remarks of the conference focused on severe drought that's helping bring the nation's biggest reservoirs to their lowest levels on record. There are also some calls for more collaboration between Western states as well as tribes along the Colorado. But indigenous communities have also been historically excluded from talks about the river. Councilman Christopher Tubby with the Ute Indian Tribe says that's still the case in Utah.
Anything that has anything to do with the water, we've been totally blocked out. We've never been consulted on anything, any decisions.
The Utes have treaty rights to a significant amount of Colorado River water, but Tubby says the state is ignoring those rights and using some of that water. A Utah water official pointed out that the state has created a new agency devoted to the Colorado River crisis. It doesn't include any tribal members on its board, but he said they would be invited to join advisory councils. For National Native News, I'm Nate Hedgie.
This week, the Canadian government said it would set aside billions of dollars to compensate Indigenous people who faced abuse as children in the country's residential schools. The United States has not announced any similar financial plans. The Mountain West News Bureau's Maggie Mullen reports.
The money is equal to about $31 billion U.S. dollars and is intended to reform Canada's child welfare system. And it came about after several weeks of negotiations between the Canadian government, the Assembly of First Nations, and others. At a press conference on Monday, Crown Indigenous Relations Minister Mark Miller said the price is high because the government failed to take action despite knowing about the problems for decades.
This is 30 years of the cost of failure, and that cost is high.
The compensation plan still needs formal agreements and judicial approval. It follows two class action lawsuits by the Assembly of First Nations filed in March 2019 and January 2020. They were intended to secure compensation for harms inflicted on Indigenous people.
And that was Maggie Mullen. After missing a year because of COVID-19, the annual Lakota Nation Invitational Basketball Tournament is back in Rapid City. Richard Tubles reports.
Last year's cancellation prompted organizers to worry about the future of LNI. They used the downtime to plan, focus, and expand this year's tournament. LNI founder and tournament director Brian Brewer says they worked with the Great Plains Tribal Leaders Health Board on COVID-19 protocols.
They're going to be there. They come up with a COVID plan also, but they will also be at the arena. If anyone wants to be tested or if they want to get a vaccine or anything like that. So they are cooperating with us and we're working together and we're really hoping that it will be a safe event as possible.
For the first time, the entire tournament will be live streamed for a fee. This includes the basketball tournament, Poetry Slam, Hand Game Tournament, and Knowledge Bowl. New events include a girls wrestling tournament and esports competitions. Organizers say the event has a $6 million annual economic impact. In Rapid City, I'm Richard Tubels.
And for National Native News, I'm Megan Kamrick.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the National Indian Child Welfare Association, dedicated to the well-being of Native children and families. News and information on NICWA, as well as how you can show your support at nicwa.org.
Support by BNSF Railway, proudly supporting the nation's economy by moving the goods that feed, supply, and power communities across the country. More at bnsf.com/tribalrelations.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling, and I'm Alyssa London. There's a good chance any one of us will face the prospect of caring for a family member who's aging or has a disability. However, willing family caregivers are taking on that role, and it requires significant financial and emotional commitments. Fortunately, there are a number of organizations that understand those commitments and have assembled a host of resources to help. Things like meals, transportation, medical appointments, and even emotional support are things that outside organizations can offer family caregivers to relieve stress and decrease the chances of burnout. It's all aimed at improving the lives of the people being cared for. We'll hear about those resources today and get the latest advice for people caring for others. And we want to hear from you. Do you have plans to care for members of your family? Are you someone who's taking on a caregiver role that you hadn't planned on? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. Now, our first guest is Larry Curley. He's the executive director of the National Indian Council on Aging. Larry is an enrolled member of the Navajo Nation. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Larry. Is Larry there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you very much for the invitation. It's good to be back.
Great to have you. Yeah, we were talking before we started the show, and I was like, oh no, we're having such a good conversation. I'm glad we still have you. So, Larry, can you tell our audience about your position and what you do for the Native community?
Well, I am the executive director of the National Indian Council and have been in that position now for 3 years. And we have been dealing with the pandemic, the effect and the after effects of the pandemic. And what we have been trying to do is work with a number of different organizations. One of the organizations that we're working with is a group called the Diverse Elders Coalition. And we have participated in some of the research that they have been doing. And one of the things that we're finding in terms of the caregiver situation has been that some of the biggest problems that tribal communities and tribal caregivers are facing is the fact that they are beginning to feel socially isolated. They're having financial strain on their budget because they have to pay out of pocket for health care, their medicines, all that type of thing. And I think that the other thing that's happening as well is that when some of these caregivers go and take their person to the doctor, they're also given the responsibility of translating complex medical terms and translating it back so that the person that they're in charge of are understand what is required and asked of them. And so, you know, we did a survey about a year ago, right in the middle of the pandemic, and 42% of those elders who are caregivers indicated that they sometimes felt isolated, and 41% felt like they were really lonely. And we received funding recently from the CDC Foundation to do a number of things, to provide information, to see what we can do in terms of providing information to that population of caregivers. And what we did was we did some PSAs, public service announcements on TV. And that particular PSAs are now running in over 300 tribal health clinics across the country through the Good Health TV that most of the tribal health clinics have in their waiting rooms and so forth. We also did some radio spots as well, and they're targeting the elders and caregivers and youth tribal leaders, just giving them ideas and suggestions about what they can do to relieve some of the pressure that some of these caregivers are having to face. And we know one thing is that we are an organization that relies, that believes on coordinating with other organizations as well. And we have been working very closely with the Alzheimer's Association, because one of the things that we found in just working with caregivers is that in the non-Indian population, one in five elders are going to be diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease within the next few years. Among Indian elders, they're finding one in three.
Did our community, the Native community, always have such an affliction with Alzheimer's, or is this a new thing due to changes in diet and even relocation from a few generations ago? Do you know any of the causes of it, or?
Well, I think that there's a number of factors at play. The exact causes, there's researchers still looking at why is it that it happens. But we do know that there are things that people can do to address some of these problems, like better diet, exercise, that type of thing, making sure that they delay the onset of it if they're going to be getting it. But in terms of the cause, that's still some of the scientific researchers are still trying to figure out. But are some things, there's some things in the brain that something like plaque that you get in your blood veins, there's similar kind of things that are happening in the brain as well. We have been doing webinars teaching people how to talk with people who have Alzheimer's, how to work with them, how to communicate with them, and some of the things that caregivers need to understand. So it's training them on how to work with people with dementia and Alzheimer's.
When you were talking about the videos and the PSAs that are going out and that have some really tangible advice for caregivers, could you share with our audience what some of that advice is so that they could maybe take it home and implement it?
Absolutely. I think that one of the things that we are targeting, as I indicated, were the elders, the caregivers, the youth, and the tribal leaders. With caregivers, we're letting them know basically that there are resources that are out there. There are organizations that are providing services, advice, counsel, that type of thing. And there are some organizations out there that provide direct services like respite care for the caregivers so that the caregivers can have a break from taking care of the people that they're responsible for. With the youth, we're encouraging them to work with their elders, take care of their elders, which is a tribal, tradition. These are customs that have been built into us. With our tribal leaders, we're hoping that they can begin to understand the extent to which these caregivers are really carrying the burden and provide, for example, maybe some tribal personnel policies need to be changed so that caregivers can take time off without losing their wages and giving them time to take care of their elders. And so these are some of the more concrete suggestions that we're making to our tribal leaders, our youth, take our elders out, and to the elders, making sure that they remain active, eat the right kinds of food, exercise, get together with your people. Don't feel like you're only one out there, because there are a lot of people that are now feeling that whole feeling of social isolation.
How does the Family Medical Leave Act integrate into this conversation? I imagine it does.
Well, I think that to a certain extent it works, but it needs to be expanded. And one of the things that the Diverse Elders Coalition just did a congressional briefing on caregivers here about a week ago. And they did a congressional briefing to let the congressmen know, Representative Bobby Scott, letting him know that these are some of the issues that not only Indian people, but the other diverse populations in the country are facing, and that there are things that we are recommending, the Diverse Elders Coalition, of which we are part of, that addresses some of these issues. For example, in the area of RAISE, which is a national act that was passed last year, we are addressing a number of priorities in those areas, five of them, in fact. And one of them, one of the most important ones, in my view, is that in order to make good policy, and a policy that is reactive to the unique cultural populations out there, including Indian tribes, is that there needs to be more research on caregivers and what they need. And that is something that is needed, because some of the research that is being done is not as inclusive as it should be. And Indian people are usually left out of the research studies. And that's what we are advocating for, is that more research studies need to be done in the Indian population to know what caregivers actually really need, what are the funding resources that are needed to address these issues. And so we're going to be asking tribal nations to assist us and advocate on behalf of our caregivers in this country.
Do you think individuals that are caring for family members have a grasp on what is available help-wise to them?
We have a website that we have developed, and it's called the NICOA Compass website. And there are resources that are on our website that they can find and look at. Nutrition, for example, a number of traditional food sources, how to prepare them, suggestions are in there. Other resources within their respective areas where they can get additional help. And we also have, for example, we put in games on that website, because one of the things that we want to make sure is that we keep their mind active, and games can do that. And so that's on our website at NICOA.org. They can go there and go to the NICOA Compass website and get all the information that they're looking for or need or want to just curiosity. Go check it out. It's a resource that we've developed with funding from the Administration for Community Living and Administration on Aging.
Wonderful. Thank you, Larry. So we're going to have to go to break, but we'll talk with you more in a few moments when we are back. This is Native America Calling. We'd love to hear from you today. Call in at 1-800-996-2848. You can also reach out on Facebook at Native America Calling or on Twitter at 18099Native, and we'll get your comments on the air. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back. It's hard to keep up on all the information about the COVID-19 pandemic. And as the threat approaches its second year mark, we'll get updates from experts about the newest variant, Omicron, booster shots, vaccines for kids, and how tribes are working to keep their citizens safe. That's on the next Native America Calling.
The Association of American Indian Physicians and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention remind you there are now booster recommendations for all three available COVID-19 vaccines in the United States. You may choose which COVID-19 vaccine you receive as a booster shot. Getting the COVID-19 vaccination protects you, your family, and your community. More information at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus, who support this show.
This is Native America Calling, and I'm Alyssa London. If you care for a family member, what advice do you have for others just beginning their journey? We're hearing some advice for caregivers today, and we're also discussing resources that family caregivers have at their disposal that they might not know about. And you can join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now, before the break, we were speaking with Larry Curley, the executive director of the National Indian Council on Aging. And as a disclaimer or note of disclosure, the National Indian Council on Aging is a financial contributor to Native America Calling's parent company. We also have on the line with us today Dr. Colette Adamson. She is a research assistant professor at the University of North Dakota and the director of the National Resource Center on Native American Aging, and she is a member of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa. Welcome to Native America Calling, Dr. Adamson.
Thank you so much, and thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you. Can you share with us some of the educational resources that caregivers can take advantage of?
Yeah, so through our Resource Center, we have conducted a health and social needs assessment with the Title VI programs and the elders they serve. So through that, we've identified some of the needs and gaps, like even in caregiving. So we had developed around 10 years ago the Native Elder Caregiver Curriculum. And it's a tool that trains Native Elder caregivers, both skilled, so your CNAs, your community health representatives, and in North Dakota, we refer to them as qualified service providers, which are your direct service providers, and other service providers at the community level. So this curriculum was developed in partnership with Chandesca Chicana College in Spirit Lake and with input from the Spirit Lake elders. And so we've had a lot of interest throughout the years with this curriculum. It's been really successful. We provide trainings. In fact, we've actually partnered with I2 they were generous enough to provide us with a sub award through a CDC grant they received. And so we've provided a couple of in-person trainings through that and some virtual webinar trainings. And actually, we have one this afternoon that is for family caregivers specifically, and that's open to the public, so anybody can register and get on that webinar today. So that's one of our main resources, and with that, we're trying to also develop a series of skill provider modules, so specific to the skill caregivers, and then also a separate series for family caregivers for modules. So we are also updating our curriculum, and it'll be a third edition available, we're hoping, by next year. And we're adding extra sections in there. And what this curriculum does is it provides information and educational tools for these caregivers, you know, for what to look for and just education on how to treat the whether it's like a something that you know you need to bring the elder to the doctor or you know how to maybe if it's something that's not severe that they can treat at home with the elder. So it's a very good tool to be able to use. So and it's available for free on our website.
Sounds like a very valuable tool. What's been some of the best feedback that you've gotten? Feedback that has been along the lines of people sharing what's been most useful for them as a caregiver?
So when the person downloads the curriculum, they fill out just a short informational sheet and we ask them how they use it. And there's, you know, it ranges from people who are caring for their spouse or somebody who's caring for their mother or father, people who there's universities that want to use it to provide a training with this curriculum, organizations that are putting on caregiving conferences that they want to, you know, utilize this tool. It's been really helpful to a lot of people because it's, you know, it was specifically designed for Native elders and tribal communities. So we've gotten a lot of good feedback on that, that, you know, with the cultural appropriateness of it. But there's also, you know, room for improvement for us. So we always take suggestions and feedback, especially whenever we're trying to update the tool and revise it and making more resources that are rolling off of it for caregivers.
Thank you. So we actually have a caller, Melvin from Santee, Nebraska, listening in on KZYK. Melvin, welcome to Native America Calling. Do you have a question or comment that you want to share with our audience and those we have on the call today?
Well, great to hear this lady and this information she has, because I went through that where my caregiver had no training, and I was having a reaction to a medicine, and he didn't know what was going on, neither did I. You know, we end up having to get an ambulance, but I had a reaction to medicine, and it'd be good if there was a training program for our caregivers. Also, my cousin, who's my caregiver, quit his job in Minnesota to come home and take care of me after I had another amputation. And, you know, he went from a $70 an hour job to caregiver pay at 11. You know, and it was a financial burden on him. Well, not really. He had been making good money, but, you know, he had to give up that. He came home to assist me, but he hasn't had any training. It sounds like what you got is what we need.
Sounds like it.
I sure hope to contact this lady and get this information. But there needs to be more information, too, in Indian country on these, you know, like I had a medication reaction.
Right.
You know, what are signs to look for? You know, and our caregivers need that training. So I thank you for that information you put out there today. Thank you.
Thank you, Melvin. And thank you for being a regular listener and a caller to our show. Dr. Adamson, can you speak to the types of training that might help the caregiver of Melvin and people and caregivers for people like Melvin?
Yeah, so I think, you know, from our curriculum, we are able, like I mentioned, please, you know, for your caregiver, please have them even, I know it's kind of a short notice announcement. I mean, we've had it out there, but, you know, having the opportunity to share this training opportunity, I would have them go on and register for this training this afternoon even to kind of take advantage of learning some of that, because what Dr. Karen Simmons, she'll be leading the training, and she's a nursing faculty at the University of North Dakota who has worked closely with us with our Native programs. She'll be providing training that includes understanding common physical changes that can occur during the aging process, obtain basic knowledge of diseases associated with system changes during the aging process, and identify helpful strategies when caring for an older adult. So she's going to go all through that today, and that's just one section of our curriculum. In the future, we plan to do more webinars, provide more training modules. So even going out to our website at www.nrcnaa.org, we have this curriculum available, and we have those training modules available. So I would recommend that they start with that, and they can also just contact us, and we can make them aware of additional training opportunities. We do provide some face-to-face training when possible. So that's another option, you know, if we can work with a tribal community in his area to provide this training.
Thank you, Dr. Adamson. That is a lot of useful information, I'm sure, to Melvin's caregiver and to caregivers like him. Now, the second part
that Melvin brought up was about how caregivers often have to quit their well-paying jobs in order to come back home and take care of a loved one. Larry, can you speak to, you know, some of the ways that the system is trying to, you know, offset this burden? I mean, that's a big choice that some people have to make, but it also is a cultural choice. Larry, do we still have you there?
I'm here.
Awesome. And you want to take that question?
Okay.
Yep, I can hear you.
Yes. I think the issue that the gentleman brought up about people leaving jobs and coming home, like you say, it's a cultural thing. But I think, secondly, there's some realistic things that we have to do. And one of them is that we're pushing Congress very hard out of this Build Better Back legislation that this administration is pushing to have funding available for caregivers, because most of the caregivers in this country are doing it for free. But it is a financial burden, as I indicated. In the Indian country, 39% of caregivers in this country say, yes, it's becoming a burden financially, and it's hard. They even have less time to even take care of their own children and grandchildren. And so it's not only a financial burden, but it's also a mental and psychological burden on them as well. And this is where organizations like IA Squared, you know, come into the mix and trying to provide respite care to those caregivers. But in terms of funding, we're pushing very hard to convince Congress to put aside funding for caregivers.
Well, that is very encouraging that progress is being made in this area. Thank you, Larry. Now, we also have a caller, Brenda, from Deering, Alaska, listening in on KOTZ. Brenda, do you have a question or a comment for those we have on the call today?
Oh, thank you for taking my call. This is Brenda calling from Deering. I just wanted to say that I take care of my brother. He had two strokes in 2010. And also, I've used music all my life. It's kind of like my medicine, music is. And I just wanted people to know that if they have a hobby like that, they can use that. I've been using music just to calm myself down and everything like that. I guess all my life I have records, I have CDs, I have music videos, and it just helps me a lot. And so I just wanted to say music is my medicine. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Thank you, Brenda. That was really encouraging, an encouraging tip that you gave to our listeners, and hopefully they can think about music as something that may help them while they are either healing as the person being cared for, or you know, when caring for someone, playing music may be helpful. Dr. Adamson, anything in your training or training modules that is pertains to music, or you know, art as something that helps those who are in need of care?
No, not at this time, but that is actually, you know, a really good suggestion that, you know, that we could definitely, like, look at incorporating in there, because, you know, some of that, you know, could be, like, from our, you know, our culture and our traditions to, you know, have that music and listening to some of those things to, you know, for those skills, to coping skills to, you know, deal with some of our you know, illnesses or things that, you know, we're struggling with. So, it's stuff like that that helps us to revise our current resources to kind of to fit the people who are using them. So, yeah, that's really interesting.
Thank you, Dr. Adamson. And Larry, any thoughts on how music and art, especially our traditional culture, is integrated into the way that the National Indian Council on Aging, you know, helps people in our community?
Yes, as a matter of fact, you know, one of the things that is really helpful to people is cooking. They like to cook. And there are recipes on our website at nicola.org, the LTSS website, as I mentioned, has a lot of recipes. And for those who are, you know, just want to take a break, play around with some recipes. There's a game section where you can go play games. You know, that's a relaxing kind of a thing as well. And as Dr. Adamson mentioned, our traditional stories, there are certain stories that you can tell only during the wintertime. Those are good to listen to. And there's a lot of humor and there's a lot of lessons built into those stories as well. So those are things that people can do. Go for a walk. Go for a walk. Go out into the woods and just take in nature, because that's where our Mother Earth is. And she will talk with us.
She will. That's great advice. Dr. Adamson, before we head to break, can you just give us a little insight on how your work has shifted as a result of the pandemic?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So one project that I didn't really get a chance to mention was that we actually are working in partnership through a grant through Margaret A. Cargill Foundation, in which we are helping to build LTSS in tribal communities in North Dakota. And one tribe we're specifically working with is Spirit Lake. And through that, the past 6 years, we have been able to work in partnership to help develop the first QSP agency in North Dakota, tribal QSP-owned agency. So they're able to provide services, home and community-based services, to the tribal elders within their tribal community. But through the pandemic, what happened was, because of safety, the agency had shut down. And so not only did the elders not receive those services that they had access to, but, you know, even like as Larry mentioned, the social isolation, you know, having that QSP come in all the time and having that chance to socialize, having somebody to visit, you know, that had an impact on our elders to not have that, you know, with those services and being able to visit with their QSP. So you know, some of that had impacts. The QSP agency itself, you know, it sustains itself through third-party billing to provide those services. So when they weren't able to provide the services, it kind of had an impact on them, continuing as an agency, but they're still recovering from that.
Dr. Adamson, it sounds like there's a lot more to learn about how the pandemic has impacted your work, and I want to hear more about it. Right now, we have to go to break, but we'll be right back. I'm your host, Alyssa London, and this is Native America Calling.
Health insurance nakud, merisidun, ilvit, nakan, ilarasi, ilatiminaktusi. Contact Louis, Indian healthcare provider. Kasakangwafsi tuolugu healthcare.gov. Nakakila lugu kukulalu 1-800-318-2596. Unakayuni Center for Medicare and Medicaid Service.
You're listening to Native America Calling, and I'm Alyssa London. There's still time if you'd like to get in on our conversation about resources for caregivers. Give us a call at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And before the break, we were speaking with Larry Curley, the Executive Director of the National Indian Council on Aging, and also Dr. Colette Adamson, the Research Assistant Professor at the University of North Dakota and Director of the National Resource Center on Native American Aging. We also want to bring into our conversation today Dr. Jolie Crowder, a program manager with the International Association for Indigenous Aging, and also Sasheen Dana Begay, the training specialist for EPICS, Education for Parents of Indian Children with Special Needs. Sasheen, can you introduce yourself? Welcome to Native America Calling.
Good morning. Yat
Thank you.
Hi. I would just like to let you guys know that I am a training specialist for EPICS, which stands for Education for Parents of Indian Children with Special Needs here in the state of New Mexico. And I represent Indigenous communities here in the state of New Mexico by getting training and, giving out information to families and guardians with children with disabilities from the ages of 0 to 26.
Wonderful. So given that we've been talking about caring for elders so far, let's continue to switch things up and talk about children. Tell us more about EPICS and your work. Give us more information about what you do.
Oh, yes. So I just help parents gather resources and support here in the state of New Mexico. And I would just like to, help parents advocate for their children and to ignite the passion that's in each parent and, just kind of support them along the way and to train them on how to, talk with the children's schools and also transitioning from high school into continuing their education or continuing like a vocational rehabilitation training after high school. So, that's what pretty much I help parents with and guardians and family members.
Sounds like very important work. Can you share with us why the resource center like EPICS is needed in Native America?
Oh, yes. I think our organization is very valuable to our parents because it gives them a chance to understand their child's diagnosis in trying to figure out, how and where to start, giving them valuable support. Sometimes they don't understand some acronyms that may be, thrown around in a educational setting. And, the parents just don't know where to start sometimes. So we just kind of give them that support and training on what some of the acronyms or, just some of the terms that they've never heard of before.
And on the advocacy side of things, how do parents need help with being advocates for their children with special needs?
Being an advocate for their child, it really helps, their child grow in a school setting or, just trying to figure out, where to start and having, the skills of being an advocate really helps in communicating with the school or, providing services with professionals in a very organized manner. And, just having advocacy skills for each parent or a family member or even grandparents, it gives them confidence to ask for these services. And if their services aren't being met, then, there's a way to find out how to, talk with the school and getting services provided for their children.
And do you consider yourself a caregiver? And if so, do you have advice that you for other parents of children with special needs?
Oh, yes. I do have a son. He has Down syndrome, and I am a caregiver. He just turned 18, so I have been advocating for him since before he was born, understanding his diagnosis and, just kind of, finding support in the community. Was one of the highest things that I could have done for myself. And, just accepting his diagnosis and understanding and asking lots of questions. And there's just so much out there for each state, finding support. Some of the places that I found support on early on in when my son was still in the hospital was parents reaching out. And that was a really good step on just kind of finding the parent centers of your state. So I do have a child with disabilities and, I'm his advocate. And, for him turning 18 and graduating and, you know, having a place in society is what one of the greatest aspects, you know, I could give for my son. And him finding his first job over the summer really helps a lot. You know, just being an advocate really helps, you know, find a voice for our children.
Has being a caregiver impacted then your career path and your choice to be a training specialist at EPICS?
Oh, my goodness. It actually has helped me. You know, it really has helped me being a training specialist and to give information to our parents and, you know, finding parents who are stuck and who need extra help. You know, I know where they've been and, you know, just finding, you know, help from early on. And, you know, when you find out your child has a disability or a diagnosis that hasn't been addressed yet, you know, just, you know, grieving that process, you know, it takes time, but there is support out in the community. And also finding what you love to do and making time for that's really another thing that really has helped me as well.
Have you found help from Native America or from Indigenous programs for your journey as a caregiver to your child with special needs?
Oh, yes, definitely. I am a returning speaker for Native America Calling, and that has really helped me a lot, you know, just, you know, talking and, you know, being more confident in my speaking skills and, you know, connecting with other resources around the nation and, you know, just even during the pandemic, you know, globally as well, finding what other countries are doing with their disability communities. So, yes, it has really helped me and other Indigenous communities out there in Canada and India and Asia, you know, just kind of some of the things that I've been kind of doing some research on as well.
I'm glad to hear it, and it's also nice to get a perspective on this topic of caregiving from someone who has more insight into the caregiving that happens for children. Now, going back, though, to the aging side of things and talking about elders, which elders are so prized in the Native American community, in our community, I want to bring in Dr. Jolie Crowder into the conversation. As a reminder, she's a program manager with the International Association for Indigenous Aging. Welcome to Native America Calling, Dr. Crowder.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. As fate should have it, we have a respite care grant that we're funding right now with some generous funding from the CDC Foundation. And we actually have three applications right now from families who are caring for disabled children. We aren't able to fund them because our eligibility criteria were that they had to be elders with signs or symptoms of dementia. So if there's anyone out there who has a program and or who has generous pockets and are willing to fund these respite grants for these families, one is a grandmother caring for two grandchildren, one of whom is disabled in a wheelchair and unable to speak and essentially needs help with all of her activities of daily living. All three of these folks reside in Montana on a reservation. The other is a 20-something sister taking care of a disabled 18-year-old brother. While we'd love to be able to help these families, unfortunately, they are not an age cohort. I think those organizations misunderstood our criteria. So as I think this evidence that the respite care needs cross the spectrum and that there's need for everyone. So.
Thank you for bringing awareness to that.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I think the process, we've been pleased to partner with HFC, which is a nonprofit founded by Laura Miller Rogan and Seth Rogan, with the funding from CDC Foundation, with some short-term direct care support, which helped us work with Dr. Adamson with their the training that they've been doing, including the one this afternoon. And the real core of that were the respite care grants. And it's been a really eye-opening experience. We have been able to fund what I think is going to be about 34 families with respite care support or something to that end. There's been a lot of challenges along the way, geography. Right now, we have a family in Wisconsin. We are out to about 70 miles away, and a provider wants $32 an hour to come in for unlicensed providers to provide care, but we're committed to seeing that they have some respite care for the daughter who's caring for her mother who's been diagnosed with dementia.
My takeaway throughout talking to all of you in this show is that there's just so much need for respite for caregivers, and I'm just blown away by, you know, how it's a 24/7 job of being a caregiver, and just have a lot of respect for all of those who are doing caregiving across Indian country. Given that your specialty is on Alzheimer's and dementia, can you talk about the kind of resources that your group provides to those types of caregivers, and then also caregivers in general?
Yeah, absolutely. There is the training that Dr. Adamson's group is doing and that we're hosting, and it starts in about 40 minutes, and this is for family caregivers. Anybody is welcome to join. Registration is still open. You guys have the link to our organization on your website, and if you go to calendar of events, you'll see it there for the date. I know it's sort of last minute, but if anybody is listening and available, you're welcome to go to the calendar of events and click on that event and then sign up to join. You'll also see lots of other things that we host that are free. We try to make all of our trainings and events free to folks. And then we share other events and trainings, which optimally that we locate that are free for folks as well. We've had a great experience partnering with Dr. Adamson. Again, we were able to get some funding to help bring their training out to communities for both Title VI directors, community health reps, and other paid-type staff and caregivers. Today's training is specific for family caregivers or informal caregivers and the like. We have funding from the CDC to provide information resources related to dementia and Alzheimer's, and we are using some of that funding to help provide training on a program called Savvy Caregiver for Indian Country. Dr. Neil Henderson is awesome. He created an adaptation of this program about 10 years ago when our executive director, Dave Aldridge, was at VICOA, one of Larry's predecessors and a great friend of Larry's. And that's a really great program that helps caregivers of people living with dementia anticipate the stages of dementia, recognize the need for self-care, match up the stages of dementia with the things that a person can really do and anticipate and achieve what they call contented involvement. And so don't over-ask or under-ask based on their capacities at any given point in time at that stage of dementia. So that's free. It's limited in terms of our capacity just because it's a pretty engaging training. We also are just started a training that's also free. It's a new program called Dementia Friends. That's based on a global program that's designed to reduce stigma related to Alzheimer's and dementia. We've adapted it for and with people from American Indian and Alaska Native communities. So it's very different than what you might see if you've ever sat in on one of those sessions. It also provides tips for talking to people with dementia if should you encounter them in the community. We talk a little bit about reducing your risk for dementia in that program. And there is also a training element because our goal would be to train someone in every tribe across the country to become a champion so that they can in turn train people in their community to become dementia friends.
Thank you, Dr. Crowder. Mm-hmm. As we reach the end of our show, where is like one place that people can go to get all of this amazing information and find these trainings?
Absolutely. Our real goal with our CDC project is to become sort of a one-stop shop for training and information and resources for caregiving training for dementia primarily, but also some in caregiving. I think Larry's long-term services and support Compass is great for tribal leaders looking for services and support in that space. And so I think the two are a really great complement.
Thank you, Dr. Crowder, and thank you to all of our guests today. And that's all the time we have for our show. Thank you to Larry Curley, Dr. Colette Adamson, Dr. Jolie Crowder, and Sachin Dena Begay. Join me here again tomorrow to hear the latest information on the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. If you have questions about the new virus variant or vaccinations for kids, we'll have medical professionals on the show to give you some guidance. That's tomorrow on Native America Calling. For now, I'm your host, Alyssa London. Thank you and have a good day.
With Christmas supplies and gifts in short supply, rest assured Prairie Edge and the Sioux Trading Post have you covered. Botanicals, craft supplies, beads, books, and music. We may not have it all, but we sure have a bunch at PrairieEdge.com who support this show. Wopila.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at RamonaFarms.com.
Health insurance, the gift of good medicine. Sign you and your loved ones up today. Contact your local Indian healthcare provider for more information. Visit healthcare.gov or call 1-800-318-2596. A message from Center for Medicare and Medicaid Service.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.